paper 15, section 10, which is old single column, page 178. All right, so they have this nice little succinct overview of the super universe level here, and by that I mean minor sector, major sector, and headquarters. You know, the whole super universe domain, and it serves as a nice little intro to the papers that we're about to get into, where we start, methodically going through the whole collection of beings that it takes to manage this whole complex hierarchical system. So, when they mention a lot of these names, they're basically out of context of the subsequent explanation of exactly who this being is. Let most of that be if you don't remember. I will mention just a couple little things so that we have something to grab a hold of. But we're not going to dwell on, exactly what's the difference between a mighty messenger and those high in authority and, all those sorts of issues. Let's see what they got here.
10. Rulers of the super universes. The headquarters of the super universes are the seats of the high spiritual government of the time-space domains. The executive branch of the super government, taking origin in the councils of the Trinity, is immediately directed by one of the seven master spirits of supreme supervision, beings who sit upon seats of paradise authority and administer the super universes through the spirit. Through the seven supreme executives stationed on the seven special worlds of the infinite spirit, the outermost satellites of paradise.
Okay, so the one thing there we've mentioned it already a number of times that the contrast between the universe of super universes compared to the universe of local universes, that collection of local universes are that dual administrative system. We have a creator son and a creator mother spirit in each one. The super universe is fundamentally a trinity administered domain. So the universe of super universes is an awful lot about the Trinity and the beings who are of origin in the Trinity, with one little qualification, basically, that they're bringing in here. Notice that they mention the infinite spirit, and precisely as the infinite spirit, when you're using that designation, that individuality designation for the third source and center, precisely the infinite spirit, that's a non-personal manifestation. When you want to really emphasize the person, that's the conjoint actor on the Isle of Paradise. Okay. And there's this very special relationship between the third source and center as the infinite spirit and that non-personal face, as it were, in relationship to the non-personalized deity that is the Paradise Trinity. There is this fundamental coupling of just a pure deity nature, not a personal nature, between the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity. And that's the engine for generating all of the administrative beings, basically. And so you see that right here. They mention you're going to have the councils of the Trinity. In other words, you're going to have all the beings that are either literally Trinity origin, or the beings that are Trinitized. So that whole group that are tied very fundamentally to the Trinity, in relationship to those primary expressions of the infinite spirit, the seven master spirits. Okay, that, and so that's the relationship they're mentioning. And we'll just leave it there. We won't go into all. You know, it's actually a very profound relationship that you don't fully appreciate until you really get into unpacking, you know, deep depth of detail. But you'll see as we go forward, they actually touch upon some of that depth of detail. We're not going to unpack it, but, you know, it's appropriate for me to just mention that this section actually has a number of things that are sort of way beyond the scope of anything that you want to talk about in, you know, even an initial graduate level examination. Okay, that deep.
From what I remember on Paradise, the enshroudment where you've got the Father is enshrouded by the Son, then by the Spirit, and then they're all enshrouded by the Trinity.
Well, the functioning of the Paradise Trinity. You know, if you want to really...
That's right closest to the enshrouding of the Spirit.
Right, immediately surrounding, yeah. Yeah. So you have that intimate juxtaposition there, too.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The super-universe headquarters are the abiding places of the reflective spirits and the reflective imagates. From this midway position, these marvelous beings conduct their tremendous reflectivity operations, thus ministering to the central universe above and to the local universes below.
Okay, so now there's a very important element in the picture are the reflective mother spirits. And start, you know, just sort of as a way of conceptualizing your understanding of the reflective mother spirits. Start with them as just as they designate them here, the reflective spirits. Don't put the mother in there. So you have these reflective spirits. And they're going to end up being... like I just said, reflective mother spirits are going to be this ubiquitous mother deity presence that spans the whole super universe. You know, they are the womb of mind. That those seven reflective mother spirits together as one presence. You know, they create this mindal womb that is the super universe. You know. The one turningness of that is their presence, okay, and they are a very, they're much more transcendent expression of mother than a creative mother spirit. You know, you're going up from the local universe to super universe, and that greater transcendence of this mother nature, which remember fundamentally, mother deity is you should understand it as coming down. And, you know, the creative mother spirit is becoming more and more of a recognizable, localized personality fact because she's come down more into the finite and has a more focused expression. So if you go back up, you're just fundamentally going to have a less focused fact when you're talking about the reflective mother spirits. They are perforce have to maintain such a defocused state as a person, as a mother, that they really aren't engageable as they need to be personally, even by the ancients of days. So there's this very interesting phenomenon with them that they're pointing out, the reflective spirits and the reflective image aids. These reflective image aids and the reflective mother spirits are what you want to think of is think of basically a twofold self. It's not only do you have these seven reflective mother spirits all together as one presence, but it's even more complicated than that. Each of them has this sort of secondary self, basically. They're a twofold self that's going to be personalized by one personality. Okay? And And that those reflective image aids are more of the he self that is localized, you know, at a point on Uversa, say, on the Super Universe Headquarters world, and is engageable, you know, in a point person to point person fashion. Whereas the diffused, from, you know, even high beings' perspective, reflective mother spirit, see, isn't focused like that at all. Whereas the creative mother spirit is both ubiquitous, and we talk about like sort of being thicker on Salvington, for instance, our creative mother spirit. So it's focused and ubiquitous at the same time. Here you don't have that in one sort of self. There's really, you want to think of it as basically two selves, a she and a he, okay, with one personality. Not two separate personalities, not separate free will, one personality. And so you engage a reflective mother spirit through this he self, but really it's a she. But when they talk about the reflective spirits making the reflective image aids, see, they call them a he when they're doing that. So just kind of think of, you have this sort of he self creation, but as soon as there really is that reflective image aid, it's not so much a reflective spirit anymore, it's a reflective mother spirit very definitively now. You've kind of separated the he and the she. Okay? And so now they're very, very definitively reflective mother spirits in contrast to their kind of he-ness being separate in the image aid.
Where does the personality reside? You mentioned it, and I can't figure out.
Well, again, see, don't think of personality as residing anywhere, because it's not a substance thing.
Doesn't it have to be attached to something?
It's identified. You know, so personality identifies, and is there going to be some problem if you kind of have, from at least a finite point of view, this sort of two separate selves in a sense? No, because personality is transcendent, very transcendent. It's transcendent of that separation that we're talking about. In terms of the personality, it sees it as one fact that it's identifying to. You know, think about how, remember, you know, don't ever forget about how transcendent this fact of personality is. It's transcendent of the difference between individuality and unity. It's transcendent of the difference between the Isle of Paradise and the Eternal Sun. It's a very transcendent fact. You know, it, from its perspective, most things blur together into one fact. That's, for instance, why when it engages an energy system, it can bring the individuality, the associativity, and the unity, the matter, mind, and spirit, together into a tri-unity. Because from its perspective, you know, it's nothing is real unless it's all together as one like that. That's what makes you real, because that's what's real to personality. Tri-unity, not separate matter, mind, spirit, individuality, associativity, unity. It needs to be together as one fact, because it's such a transcendent, singular sort of identification that it's doing. Okay? So the reflective mother spirits and reflective image aids is a very fascinating thing. It's like having a he and a she together as one. You know? And so when that personality wants to express, you know, it doesn't somehow boom across the super universe as some giant, you know, presence voice. You know, it comes out of the he face, the he self, the reflective image aid.
Why are there seven? Does
that have to do with the seven? There's seven in each, right? Because there's one of each master spirit flavor. And we're going to get into that in the last section of this paper. Remember, the seven super universe, there's seven different schemes. And one of those schemes is primary in you know, one of the super universes, but they're all seven in each. So you need a sevenfold presence to be present for all seven schemes in each universe, even though one is primary in each, because there's only one master spirit tied to each one. But a reflective mother spirit tied to a master spirit, you know, one from each of the seven master spirits. Okay. So that, and maybe just maybe one little thing about that. So the reflective mother spirits, if they're going to be mother, the Trinity's got to be involved. I mean, they're really of origin in the Trinity, the reflective mother spirits. The totality attitude, you know, that mother presence, that functioning of the Trinity. But you know, each set of seven, the Paradise Trinity is in liaison with one of the master spirits to give rise to its seven reflective mother spirits. Yeah, and so through its seven master spirits, seven times seven, you got 49 reflective mother spirits. You know, and then one of each flavor goes to each super universe. So they're Trinity origin, but not purely. There's this relationship, like I was telling you about the Paradise Trinity and Infinite Spirit. See, there's a fundamental coupling going on right there that you can just see that these primary expressions of the Infinite Spirit, the Master Spirits, are involved. Okay, but a lot of beings we'll read about are just purely trinitized by Paradise Trinity. There's no other fact involved, like the author of this paper, a universal censor. That's just purely the Trinity that trinitizes that self into existence, and then it gets personalized.
Why wouldn't so they're up there in the super universe headquarters, and there are these reflective spirits and the reflective imagates, and they're bringing this their reflectivity operations, and they're ministering to the central universe above and to the local universe below. So like they're taken from what God is, or those, you know, God is basically thinking and bringing those kind of those thoughts down, and they're reflecting those thoughts and then bringing it down.
No, not like that. Don't think of it. Because it's not bringing God down like that. That's not what reflectivity is.
That's what helps.
Yeah, you know, well, but what reflectivity is, before I explain that, okay, don't ever, I mean, just because they're called a reflective mother spirits, don't think, well, they're just about reflectivity. No, they're the womb of mind. They're in many ways like the creative mother spirit. Okay, it's just they're a very central being in this reflectivity service. They're not the only beings. There's lots and lots of beings involved in the reflectivity service. It's a very, very complex phenomenon. It's going from paradise all through the central universe and out into the super universe is a very complex thing. They're just pointing out right there that they have this sort of central position. And fundamentally, what the reflectivity, the fact of reflectivity, comes not from God on paradise. It comes from the Supreme Being.
Okay.
So what it fundamentally is, I mean, forget about the fact that there's a lot of beings that are involved in the mechanism of it down here in the finite. Fundamentally what it is, grand universe reflectivity is the cosmic presence of the Supreme Mind. The Supreme Being has the Supreme Mind, or is the Supreme Mind. And, you know, you can use that as an alternative name for the Supreme Being, the Supreme Mind. That transcendental mind, you know, projects a shadow down into the finite as a cosmic presence, you know, a finite shadow cast from that transcendent fact. And that, you know, that presence which spans, encompasses everything of the finite, not just the space of the grand universe, but you know, the Supreme Being encompasses every single finite fact of any sort, shape, whatever. Okay, And so the Supreme Mind touches all of those finite facts simultaneously, as if they were one fact. So there is this fact in the finite called reflectivity, this fact that that all finite things are an intimate association. And in terms of a communication-like connectivity, it means that you have point A connected to the point B in the finite as if there's no finite distance between point A and point B. You can get, you know, information from point A to point B without any time delay. Because just think about why that is. Those two points are in the mind of the Supreme Being simultaneously, okay? His thoughts are present in both places simultaneously. Hence, what you see is the shadow cast of that is, you know, information is present between those two points down here as if it traveled at infinite speed. But see, it didn't really travel at all. For the Supreme Mind, it's one point with zero volume. So there's no time, you know, no travel time required. Okay. Like they're saying, the key thing to initially bring in is that there's a fundamental linkage between the details in the central universe, which are beyond the scope of our immediate discussion, and the details in the super universe. There's a reflective connection between the two. Very complex but very complete. That the super universe, the super universe level and the central universe have no discontinuities between them. They're perfectly reflectively linked and synchronized together. And then, of course, the local universes are within the super universe, so not surprisingly, you know, there's no disconnect there either. Yeah, but obviously, the central universe plays a central role. I mean, the super universe plays a central role in this connection between the local universes below and the central universe above. Yeah.
That sinking, is it at least upward? Is that the sinking to the master spirits or to the Supreme Being?
See, that's what I'm saying. Neither. I mean, directly. And it's not even to Magistan first. It's much more complicated than that. But we're not going to get it. Just know that there's a lot of facts in the central universe that you have to put together, okay? There's a lot of facts between Uversa and Magistan.
Wow, okay? Just between Uversa and Magistan.
Okay. Right.
Where's Magistan reside?
On Paradise. Magistan of Paradise, they call him, you know, quote unquote.
I thought he resided on the...
No, Magistan's on Paradise. Master spirits are on Paradise. You know, the master spirits of Paradise. Okay. Okay. all right. So, like I said, now, you know, coming up is a paper where there's a whole section on reflective mother spirits and a whole section on the reflective image aids, etc. But just to, you know, give you an initial perspective here.
Each super universe is presided over by three Ancients of Days, the joint chief executives of the super government. In its executive branch, the personnel of the super universe government consists of seven different groups. Number one, Ancients of Days. Two, Perfectors of Wisdom. Three, Divine Counselors. Four, Universal Censors. Five, Mighty Messengers. Six, Those High in Authority. Seven, Those Without Name and Number. The three Ancients of Days are immediately assisted by a core of 1 billion Perfectors of Wisdom, with whom are associated 3 billion Divine Counselors. 1 billion Universal Censors are attached to each super universe administration. These three groups are coordinate Trinity personalities, taking origin directly and divinely in the Paradise Trinity.
Okay, so just like they say at the end, those are directly in, you know, Trinity origin beings. And the only thing that you sort of can immediately deduce from that, that is described up in the sections about each of those beings, with the perfecters of wisdom, like there's a billion in each super universe, and so there's 7 billion total, period. The divine counselors, there's 3 billion in each, so there's 21 billion total, period. With the universe of censors, there's the billion in each super universe, but there's also a billion in the central universe. So there's 8 billion of them. So there's a little hole. Yeah, he was just saying that there was a lot more connectivity between the central universe and the super universe that's sort of immediately apparent until you start noticing some of the details. Yeah, the universal sensors. There's, and the billion that are in the central universe are quite mysterious to even the revelators. They know that they must be foreshadowing the next age in many ways. Okay? But they're already there. All right. And maybe just one little thing to say about that list. Numbers, items 2 through 7, perfectors of wisdom down to those without name and number. Those are all creatures. Okay? Just like us, they're creatures. Very high creatures in some cases, but creatures. And the ancients of days are creator. They're God. Yeah. Don't ever forget that the ancients of days are God. Okay. The other of days, no. Or the Trinitized secrets of supremacy. No. The ancients of the days are God. They're personalized deity. They aren't just divine selves. Okay? Like I said, then, the way they just toss these out, you're going, well, who in the heck are the, all this is this long list of all these beings that they introduce in greater detail in the subsequent papers.
The remaining three orders, mighty messengers, those high in authority, and those without name and number, are glorified ascendant mortals. The first of these orders came up through the ascendant regime and passed through Havona in the days of Grand Fonda. Having attained paradise, they were mustered into the core of the finality, embraced by the paradise trinity, and subsequently assigned to the supernal service of the Ancients of Days. As a class, these three orders are known as Trinitized Sons of Attainment, being of dual origin, but now of Trinity service. Thus was the executive branch of the superuniverse government enlarged to include the glorified and perfected children of the evolutionary worlds.
Okay, maybe just one little thing, just so you don't misinterpret. When they say the first of these orders came up through, that's not referring to just the mighty messengers. That's all three types, but the first members of all three types of the Trinitized Sons of Attainment. There were some of them in those very first ascenders that were in the days of Grand Fonda. Okay, so as early as possible, the super universe governments have had this augmentation of perfected creatures in association with perfect creatures. But while Grand Fonda and all of his contemporaries were ascending, the super universe government didn't have any such. So there was an initial transient phase there. And there's a lot of things like that that you can puzzle over. These beings, that end up being out in the super universe as administrators, a lot of them were initially in the central universe before there was a super universe level, doing something totally different than what they're doing now. There was a totally different regime in the central universe before there was the super universes. And how long was that regime? Well, all the way back to the eternal past. Remember, Havona is an eternal fact. Now, ancients of days, they're the first beings on the finite personality record. They have a start time. Okay, but some things that are going on, even if they had a start time, they may have started in the central universe And so there was just like I'm saying there was kind of an initial phase where things weren't exactly like they are now out in the super universes. It sort of started in the central universe and slowly shifted out and got fully set up. Okay. Because again, it's a temporal domain, so you know, even constructing super universe headquarters, that doesn't happen in a day. Yeah, there's a, you know, but the people who are going to occupy those headquarters have to be directing their construction, you know, and so where are they before, you know, while U-verse is being constructed, where are the ancients of days? You know, they're not just floating out in space somewhere watching the construction crew, okay? They have to be somewhere. And that central universe was transitioning out of its old mode into its current mode. And we'll have a similar transition once the grand universe is settled in light and life, then the central universe is going to take on a totally different regime again. Okay, there was a question somewhere, didn't I tell you?
How can they keep track of those without name and number?
The answer to that is, go check on that section up in those Trinitized Sons of God, and they explain to you why they chose that name. It's not because they're beyond our numerical concept. It's not like they're Frandalanx, okay? And are, you know, that's not the meaning of that designation. But that's a great example of, you know, there's just, you know, when they just toss out these names, you know, at this point, you know, if you haven't ever read the book, you're going, what on earth are all these beings? Okay, but they're just sort of, like I said, they're just giving you kind of this initial little introduction and maybe giving you a little something to remember when you get to the details. Oh, yeah, that's right. They were involved in, you know. All right, let's see. Is there anything else there? No, let's just leave it at that. We'll actually touch upon them a little bit again in a couple sections, and we can say a little bit more about them.
The coordinate council of the superuniverse is composed of the seven executive groups previously named and the following sector rules and other regional overseers.
Sector rulers.
Rulers. Okay. One, perfections of days. The rulers of the superuniverse major sectors. Two, recents of days, the directors of the superuniverse minor sectors. Three, unions of days, the paradise advisors to the rulers of the local universes. Four, faithfuls of days, the paradise counselors to the most high rulers of the constellation governments. Five, Trinity teacher sons who may chance to be on duty at superuniverse headquarters. Six, Eternals of Days, who may happen to be present at Super Universe Headquarters. Seven, the seven reflective image aids, the spokesmen of the seven reflective spirits, and through them, representatives of the seven master spirits of paradise.
Okay. Now, you have all the of days beings. Like I said, none of those are God. Yeah.
Trinity teacher sons, the Super Universe. They come to the planets.
Right. The Trinity Teacher Sons are a very diverse group. They're Trinity origin, but they function in a very broad scope. For instance, the Eternals of Days. Unlike the Ancients of Days that stay put on the Super Universe Headquarters worlds, the rulers of the billion worlds of Havona, the Eternals of Days, are mobile. Yeah, and occasionally they'll go out and spend some time at a super universe headquarters, some of them. Okay, when they do that, a Trinity teacher son watches over their world. It's like, whoa, okay, so that's a pretty high being, isn't it? you know, so a being that, on the one hand, might be, you know, subbing for an Eternal of Days, who's literally an eternal, okay, of days, you know, and yet you know, will come down on a mission to a mortal world to get the world up to the age of light and life. So,
it's interesting.
And everything in between. See, from the highest high to the lowest low, practically.
They're called Trinity teacher sons, so they're related to the Trinity, that kind of elasticity of...
Yeah, a totality attitude,
right,
see, is inherent in them, but they have, but they're not so much a ubiquitous sort of a totality attitude. They're a sun as well,
right.
They're, so they're like a point phenomenon, but a very ubiquitous point phenomenon, as it were, see? You know, another thing the justice administration aspect of the Trinity, you know, it's that very holistic totality attitude, you know, behind that. You know, that totality attitude functioning of the Paradise Trinity in that, which comes from the Paradise Trinity, is an important one to sort of always sort of put right up front, you know, and understand how that's in play. Let's see. There was something else I was going to bring in there. Oh, yeah, let's see. Okay, so the bit about the Eternals of Days. This is, you know, a spot where you're starting to notice something that is actually mentioned a few other places. There's this very tight linkage between the Eternals of Days and the Ancients of Days. That's the root of this linkage between the central universe and the super universe level. This very close kinship between the Eternals of Days and the Ancients of Days. Okay. Even though the Eternals of Days aren't God, the nature of their self is higher than an Ancient of Days. And so they end up balancing some in terms of just their nature. The other thing that you could, you know, notice as you're just being introduced to the of days here the first time, you know, well in advance of the paper on them, the paper on the Supreme Trinity personalities, is this fact that this hierarchy of days beings only goes down to the constellation level, right? And that's foreshadowing the other end of the linkage that I was just describing, where you have the Eternals of Days connected to the Ancients of Days, so the above created to the middle. When a local universe is settled in light and life, and it becomes much less of the Creator Son, Creator Mother Spirit domain than it started out to be, and sort of, you know, melts into the super universe to a large degree, the deputies of the Ancients of Days are the Most Highs. Okay, so they become, the Most Highs become Most High. They become, you know, really more part of the super universe regime than the local universe regime. You know, and in many ways, step up above their mom and dad. See? And really come into direct relationship with the Ancients of Days. And so the fact that there's already Faithfuls of Days there, see, foreshadows that.
Trinity teacher sons are Trinity origin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and there's no Trinity representatives in our universe short of the constellation level as the first.
Right.
But Then there was Melchizedek, these are teachers, and they apparently can do emergency duty, as they did here, Machiavelli, incarnated. Now, is he Trinity?
No. See, that's the whole thing. I mean, you know, remember, Melchizedek's sons are the offspring of Creator Son, Creator Mother Spirit. Okay, they're local universe. They do play, you know, Gabriel and the Father Melchizedek take on new roles in relationship to the super universe government when the local universe is settled in light and life. And, you know, again, that's part of that story that's not really in play right here. But They begin to leave that local universe specificity behind in the future. Okay, let's see. Anything else we want to mention up front there? Let's see. Just kind of notice one other little thing to notice is they say rulers, directors, advisors, counselors as they go down the of days there. You know, just giving you a little bit of a something to reflect on. The perfections of days, think of them as much more closely being the immediate deputies of the ancients of days, you know, who are, so you have rulers and deputy rulers, sort of, so using the rulers like you would for the ancients of days is kind of appropriate there. Dropping down to the recents of days, you much more have a phenomenon now where you have the minor sector and you need those recents of days directing all of the local universes within that minor sector. Okay? And remember how you'll have the creator sons will go up to the minor sector level to have a confab to kind of get into that higher oversight directive mode, directed mode. Because you have rulers of the local universe, you know, it's very much an advisory position. The little bit stronger word of counselor, again, like I said, foreshadows the linkage between the Most Highs and the Ancients of Days. You need a little bit more of a sort of direct voice of the ancients of days to the Most Highs in play there, as opposed to just I'm off to the side here, Emmanuel. You know, I'm off to the side as the Union of Days. I'm here if you need me, Michael and Great Mother Spirit. Okay. So just that difference in and how this is all very it's a very dynamic, complicated system that isn't just simplistically hierarchical, you know, and calling them the Most Highs is a great example of that. Yeah. They're not somewhat highs, they're Most Highs, you know. At one point, they really are, like I said, are, you know, move up above Michael in the picture. Or another example, you take a Verondadek son who's serving on a world like the Most High Observer that's here. When he assumes a regency, okay, he's Most High. Okay, he speaks directly as if the Father was standing there. Okay, that's really Most High stuff. Okay, it's like an absolute voice speaking. Okay, so. Right. There's no one can appeal anything. It's an absolute, you know, edict when he says something. Okay. Most High. Okay. See, so that fact that you, it's like, well, shouldn't that be Michael? It's like, well, see, you just can't think in a very simplistic fashion, because just remember that unlike you have a central universe and outside of that you have the super universes. That's one thing. But the local universes are all inside of a super universe. You know, it's not like you take the presence of the reflective mother spirits and carve out little holes in it, you know, and stick a local universe in it. I mean, the reflective mother spirit is completely present in this room. The seven of them as one fill this room and all of the super universe. Okay. And then plus the creative mother spirit fills this room too. But the reflective mother spirits fill this room.
Jesus spoke to that about the Most High a few times.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And, especially since, a lot of times he would be reminding people of kind of the normal sequence of revelation, you know, that they had all of this prior revelation about up to the constellation level, up to the Most Highs. You know, and so he was trying to leverage off of that very directly. Yeah. Okay, so now here's the paragraph that I was alluding to that has all kinds of very transcendent of anything that's in this paper, stuff that's brought up. Yep, okay, yeah.
On the Ancients of Days, those are the ones who make the final determination whether we're going to evaporate or not.
They have final say over the extinction of will creatures, so of any sort.
The will creatures, do they have to go face them, like, in a jury trial thing, or, like, on Paradise?
No. No, one day the executioners of the Ancients of Days will show up at the cell block, and, you know, where Lucifer is, and they will be no more.
So they make their decision on Paradise, but you don't.
No, on Universa. Remember, the Ancients of Days are on the Super Universe headquarters.
Oh, I thought they resided on Paradise.
No. Okay. It's God come down to be with us more.
Okay.
Yeah.
The reflective imagades also function as the representatives of numerous groups of beings who are influential in the superuniverse governments, but who are not at present, for various reasons, fully active in their individual capacities. Embraced within this group are the evolving superuniverse personality manifestation of the Supreme Being, the unqualified supervisors of the Supreme, the qualified vicegerents of the Ultimate, the unnamed liaison reflectivators of Magistan, and the superpersonal spirit representatives of the Eternal Son.
Wow.
Okay. Now,
talk about car parts.
All right. Those details can be sorted out. We're not going to do that. But let's just get a couple of points of recognition. Okay, so the first thing, the reflective image aids are also functioning as representatives. So why would they be doing this? Why are they doing it for the reflective mother spirits? And what did I just say about the nature of a reflective mother spirit and why, you know, she needs an image aid? Because she is very transcendent. Okay, you can't really come up face to face and engage such a lofty being. In other words, because they're very transcendent, they're just too ethereal, okay, to really engage personally. So you need this solidification point that you can engage them through.
Chris, would you call them her fingertips?
No. Literally, it's her face. And these image aids are the face. It's what you can actually see. A face that you can see and talk to. Okay, but don't think of it as an avatar. It's a self that a personality is identified to. It just has that complication I talked about. But they also serve, see, as the representatives of some other transcendent beings that it's pretty hard for even beings who are quite a bit higher than us, to engage it in any sort of solid way. There needs to be a face for these very transcendent, ethereal-like, from our perspective, beings. Okay, so the first one. The evolving superuniverse personality manifestation of the Supreme Being. What do we call that? The personality manifestation that's down in the finite, you know, the Supreme Being, that's the transcendent He. The Supreme Being is not in the finite. The Supreme Being is so transcendent that it's not even in the finite. He's not even in the finite, okay? And so we're talking about the evolving universe personality manifestation. There's something that actually manifests down here in the finite that has personality. What's that?
God, Almighty, the Mother.
The Universal Mother, yes. Right? The reflective image aids also give voice to the universal mother. Okay? Remember how this works. You have the transcendent he, the supreme being. You come down into the finite, you don't have a he, you have a she and an it. Okay? The it's not a person. Okay? But I could say, if I said the evolving super universe power manifestation of the supreme being, the name for that individual is the Almighty Supreme. Right. That's the evolving super universe power manifestation, but the evolving super universe personality manifestation, that's the universal mother.
See, I forget that she's evolving because she comes down.
Right. They're both evolving. The Almighty Supreme, you know, you think of as evolving in an upward fashion, and the Universal Mother in a downward fashion. Okay. So, you know, that's another way to say that. You know, we're way, way in advance of the paper where they actually introduce us to that designation, the Universal Mother. You know, where is that? Paper 117. Okay, we're a long ways from there. So they're not going to say that.
But you're showing us where they're planting hands.
But this, you know, that's, you know, you could replace all that verbiage by, you know, embraced within this group are the universal mother. You know, the mother supreme. Okay?
Well, they were wise, though. They know how much resistance there is to that.
Yeah. Well, or how much, you know, on-ramp is required to get to the point where you can recognize that. Okay, the unqualified supervisors of the Supreme, let me just say one little thing about them. Those are the associates of the Supreme Being. Those are transcendental he's also. They're bringing the top-down point of view of the Supreme Being down to the Ancients of Days. They're supervisors of the Ancients of Days. They're not supervising the Supreme. Okay. They're the associates of the Supreme Being. They're of supreme nature. Okay. They're the associates of the Supreme Being. And they're supervisors of the Ancients of Days. They're supervising God.
Wow.
So what would that make them?
Deity.
Personalized deity. God. We won't bring up the qualified vicegerents of the ultimate. That's a and the unnamed reflect on unnamed liaison reflectivators of Magistan. But I can just tell you that's part of the details of the whole very complex linkage between central and super universe and the whole reflectivity system.
Do you have any feel for the unqualified supervisors of the Supreme? If they're the supervisors of the Ancients of Days, are they more of a mother type supervisor,
no,
or
he.
Are they a father?
They're a he.
Oh, you said that. Yeah.
They're he.
So it's almost like if you compare it to us, it's the father.
They're the deputy fathers. Remember, you know, the Supreme Being is the Supreme Father. They're the deputy supreme fathers.
So that's how all the Ancients of Days know the will of the Father.
Right. They know how. That's how they know the will of the Supreme Father. You know, and for a finite being, you know, when you reach up, you're reaching up to the Universal Father. Really, all you can reach up to is the Supreme Father.
Wow.
Yeah. To the Supreme Being. Yeah. Yep.
Could you just talk for a minute for me on the use of the word unqualified and qualified?
By qualified, we mean more in the philosophic sense. In other words, there's an infinite, you know, this started in a kind of an infinite picture. There's an infinite number of qualities that something could have. Does it have them all in some sense? Or is it limited? Is it unqualified? Or is it qualified? You know, have you drawn us? You know, have you taken everything and you've drawn us a line around? I'm going to separate this stuff from the rest of the stuff.
Qualified.
Yeah, like the qualified absolute and the unqualified absolute.
Okay, got
Okay? You know, the way to think about that is you start with it all together, and there's one aspect of it that you're going to sift out and collect together. You know, there's a certain qualification that you're going to focus on to differentiate the whole mess into two piles. You know, and that particular thing that you use to distinguish, to split it in half, the qualification for that, you know, makes that which has that attribute or that aspect the qualified thing, and then the rest is the unqualified. Now here, they're the unqualified supervisors of the Supreme in the sense that they are, he who has seen them has seen the Supreme Being in a sense. I mean, it's a very unqualified, uncircumscribed, undiminished expression.
It doesn't have to do with a capability. It has more to do with
extent. You know, they span the, you know, everything that the Supreme Being could possibly bring directly into play down here in the finite, they possess. Without qualification, see? Right. Whereas the qualified vicegerents of the ultimate, see, I mean, they're not going to be all of the ultimate sort of nature. Okay, there's going to be some qualification there. And, see, the unnamed thing, they chose not to give a proper capitalized designation for this group of beings, and sometimes they'll call them liaison reflectivators, sometimes they'll call them reflectivator liaisons, depending on what they want to emphasize. The unnamed is the fact that you don't see capital letters there. And then the superpersonal spirit representatives of the Eternal Son, we've talked about them before. You have the seven worlds of the Eternal Son around the Isle of Paradise that have these entities, beings, you know, it's hard to know, even know what to, remember they say they don't even really know what to call these facts. But, you know, whoever directs, which they don't know, whoever directs the seven worlds of the sun, those directors of those worlds send representatives out to engage the ancients of days. Okay? And these are very transcendent individuals who, when they want to engage the ancients of the days, have to do so through the reflective image aids. You know, and so the fact that you have such a diverse thing, again, you know, who gave rise to the reflective mother spirits, and then who gave rise to their image aids? The Trinity, a totality attitude. Now, a fact that can span such a menagerie and precisely and perfectly give voice to the Universal Mother or a qualified vicegerent of the ultimate or, So again, just, when you let it sink in and stand in awe of what kind of a presence is in this room. The reflective mother spirit presence in this room is an incredibly profound presence, way above the pay grade of creative mother spirits and creator sons. Very profound fact is present in this room. Okay? And that's just a super universe level sort of a fact. You know, that's not the universal mother, which is even more profound. Okay? Just to try to really, get yourself the reason, one of the main reasons to spend some time letting this stuff sink in is so that you have a proper outer life that you're trying to bring your inner life into engagement with. If your outer life is some simplistic little space, your whole sense of meaning will be magical that's, they're giving you all this, they're giving you all this coordination of essential knowledge about the outer life, and a whole bunch of stuff about the inner life, because you need to get a full, genuine inner life and a full engagement of a genuine outer life, which is not some flatlander space, okay, very complicated, and then and only then could you bring the two into a true relationship, and then and only then could you then live, really live, in that true relationship where truth lies. Truth lies in that relationship. If you don't have a genuine outer life, all this stuff, if you don't have a genuine inner life, or both, forget about truth. Forget about really living. Okay? And you don't have to be able to tell me how many universal sensors there are in the central universe, you know, off the top of your head. But the point is, you don't just go, yada, 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 whatever, this doesn't have anything to do with me. No, it has everything. This distinction is vital. Vital is about life, vitality. You know, you want to be really living. In order to be really living, you have to come into relationship with the objective cosmos, not some magical figmentary space that isn't actually out there at all. You declare it to be, but it's really all here. Figment is in here. Fact is out here. Okay? Here. Oh, and then Kate. Okay.
Well, I just had a thought today that really ties into it, where I was just realizing that your spirituality takes on this really stimulating intellectual pursuit.
What leads you Godward? Your feelings? Your thoughts. That is epical revelation.
To have a religion without any intellectual stimulation, but just some rote prayer.
Or you know, if it's not ritualistic and rote, I mean, it's mystical. Okay, the whole history of mankind is, in terms of religion, is some degree of an actual inner life, but it's not in relationship to a genuine outer life. You know, it's an inner life of goodness, you know, inner life with goodness, let's say, you know, an inner life with goodness, you know, because goodness is the sort of your objective connection to value. Yeah, that recognition and connection to value. Objective value. So you have an inner life with goodness plus figment. That's the history of religion. And that's why there's never been true religion. Okay, and you can't live merely religion. You can't live merely science. But people have been trying forever. For most of history, they've been trying to live merely religion in the mode I just said, an inner life with goodness plus figment, and they try to live in the relationship between that unity, that goodness, and that figmentary individuality, these imaginary fact points that they're trying to live in the so-called truth between them, okay? And then in more modern times, we have the reciprocal phenomenon where you have an outer life with facts, because you start out in a genuinely scientific mode of some sort. So there's some outer life with facts plus delusion. And you try to live. You know, delusion is a substitute for actual goodness. Okay? So you take this outer life with facts plus delusion, and you try to live merely science. Okay? That's what we've got. We've got this, and neither of those people are really living. Okay? The only way to be really living is like I was describing. You need true religion and true science. Because then and only then can you have true philosophy, the only thing that you can really live. You can only really live true philosophy. Okay? A philosophy of life. That's what the fifth epical revelation is here for. This has a philosophic purpose, fundamentally. Because it needs to get us really living instead of this imaginary living, you know, in either of the endpoints.
But synonymous with philosophy is thinking. Have you ever thought of met a non-thinking philosopher?
Wisdom, right there, exactly. Yep.
I feel like I'm really living. Can you explain what really living means?
It's by really you mean you've actually liberated the potential of your personality to do the only thing it can do, like I was describing up front. Your personality can only actualize as a harmonization that is a triunity. Okay, when you look at the chart here, you know, and you have matter, mind, spirit, personality. That harmony is down here in this person, in the personality block. The personality is establishing that harmony. What kind of a harmony is it? It's a triunity. Okay? It's a threefold actuality. To actually get the potential of personality manifested, it has to bring individuality, associativity, and unity together into a triunity. It can't just do religion. Make you real with just religion. It can't make you real with just science. It can't even abstractly, you know, make you real with just philosophy. Okay, you need true religion and true science, a genuine inner life and a genuine outer life, so that there can be a super additive consequence for you even have the third thing to put together with your personality. Okay? So you're living when you're starting to develop an inner life, but you're not really living yet. You know, and this is not to put us down. This is just to remind us, you know, that we want to use the word real for a very profound fact. We want real to designate that you've wrapped yourself around the infinite eternal ellipse. You've come into relationship with the infinity and eternity. That's what makes you real. That's not a tiny thing. It's nothing that you want to sell short in any way possible. You want to constantly be really assuming that you haven't gotten there yet, and you want to try to take it up another notch. Trust that everything is fine. It's not like your life is meaningless and you're valueless if you don't have some confirmation directly from God that you're really living now instead of merely living. But just really take on this challenge to never be satisfied with where you are at any moment and think, well, even if I'm really living right now, I can be more really living tomorrow, because that's what ascension is about. Every step you take in your ascension, you're more really living than you were the step before. A first circler is more really living than a second circler, you know, et cetera. Right? If you've made it to Avona, you're more really living than you were when you were down at the constellation level. And when you're at the constellation level, you're at a level that you can't even imagine right now. Okay? You're so really living there that it's beyond your comprehension right now. Okay? So that's the kind of thing we're bringing in. But anyway, all these intriguing little things. And there's a handful of spots, especially the unqualified supervisors of the Supreme, because they're involved in a lot of the stuff with light and life of local universes and things like that. You can find some references about them. Some of the other ones, it's only in the paper with the list of the beings, you know, paper 30, that you, you know, you'll see their names again.
At almost all times, it is possible to find representatives of all groups of created beings on the headquarters worlds of the super universes. The routine ministering work of the super universes is performed by the mighty Sakonophim and by other members of the vast family of the infinite spirit. in the work of these marvelous centers of superuniverse administration, control, ministry, and executive judgment, the intelligence of every sphere of universal life are mingled in effective service, wise administration, loving ministry, and just judgment.
Okay, that's pretty straightforward. That's just, like I said, you know, there's this endless list of individuals. Another one was tossed out there that they haven't formally introduced yet. Got many papers to go. Sakanafim, yeah, a higher order of angels than the seraphim, yeah. Mighty Sakanafim. The Sakanafim are the daughters of which mothers? Trinity's not a mother. Reflect the mother spirits, of course. Yeah. Right? Yeah. So that, you know, as a great example of there's this initial sort of establishment of the he face, the image aid, you know, putting the reflective mother spirits really in that, definitively in that mother mode. And as mothers, they create daughters. Yeah, Sakanafim.
I like the word mighty before them.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Now, what word did I just use? The reflective mother spirits create. Okay. See? Remember, see that, you know, like I said, you know, it's only when you want to start filling out the column of the cosmic mothers to parallel the creators and controllers of God the sevenfold, that you start to get a little bit more complex picture in play. The higher you go with the mother, the less sort of immediate the discussion is. You got quite a bit of immediate discussion of creative mother spirits. But when you go up to reflective mother spirits, or really when you go up to creative mother agencies of the Ancients of Days, you know, or the universal mother, you know, it starts to get, you don't have a lot of very direct in your face discussion of them. But like we just, you know, they actually just talked about the universal mother, not in those three words, but it was right there. You know, when you begin to recognize that normally when you talk about the God the sevenfold, you'll put the Ancients of Days and the Master Spirits on, you know, as the you know, the creators on those two levels. And sometimes instead of just the Creator Sons, you'll throw in the Creator Mother Spirits as two groups on that level of God the sevenfold. But you never have anything paired with the Master Spirits or the Ancients of Days. They're always just by themselves as creators, quote unquote, on that level. Well, the rest of the story, you know, is the more mother-like side of it. You have these creative mother agencies of the Ancients of Days and the reflective mother spirits of the Master Spirits. You have these mother beings. And notice that the reflective mother spirits of the Master Spirits are on the level with the Ancients of Days. And the creative mother agencies of the Ancients of the Days are on the level of the Master's. Yeah. There is a reciprocal relationship between them. It's like I said, it's actually a very complex system. Okay,
yeah.
The way these beings are working together in a cosmic harmony. But at some point, you know, it's not like they don't tell you who made the Sakanafim, and you know, just let it sink in. It's like, wait a minute. You know, if you're gonna make angels, okay, you've got to be a creator.
So on that level there, it says the creative mother agencies of the Ancients of Days. So mm-hmm. That would be good, because then they'd have a little bit more mercy if they had some mother spirit with them. You know?
Well,
probably.
But what adjective did you just notice in front of Sakanafim? Mighty. Mighty. Ooh, that sounds like something with a sword, not something with a blanket. Yeah. Don't forget.
Etymology for siconophon.
Well, it's just they're needing to coin some parallel words, just like they did with, you know, we have Ancient of Days, and so they turn that into Ancients of Days, and then create a parallel set of days. They're just playing off of the language. So you have seraphim. They're just creating. They're taking the fem part and generalizing it. So you have primary and secondary, yeah. And you, so you have supernaphim and seconophim, second.
Secondary.
Okay. See, yeah. It's, yeah. And omniphim and, you know, and tertiaryphim. So you have, you know, one, two, three, supernaphim, seconophim, tertiaryphim. And then you have omniphim, the all phims. Okay. And, yeah, so they're just playing off the language. Let's see. All right, so, you know, and just maybe the other thing, just, you know, in the same way that the reflective image aids, you know, can give voice to such a diverse group, diversity is the order of business. You know, they're reminding in this paragraph. I mean, you know, it all, the whole super universe is coming to a focus point here on the headquarters world. So it's all there. Everything that's going on in the super universe, including those other six schemes that we really don't know much about, it's all there in one giant melting pot of intrigue for us when we arrive there. You know, we're going to, I mean, talk about the crossroads like Jesus was born into, you know, in Palestine there. Boy, are you at a crossroads of, you know, of the celestial culture, yes, you know, when you're on the Universa.
Major sector is education, intellectual, correct?
Physical, intellectual, spiritual, you know, because individuality, associativity, unity.
When we're there, when we're studying on one of the satellites of U Major or something like that, that's when we're going to be getting a lot of this information that's going to prepare us to really comprehend and participate in what's going on in the universe.
Yeah, and like that, we won't get to it tonight, but next week you'll see they mentioned about when you get to the minor sector headquarters, that's when they begin to really introduce you, get you, you know, start, you know, and of course you're really coming up to speed. It's a major sector because you're going to jump into it. You got to hit the ground running when you get to Super Universe headquarters.
The Super Universes do not maintain any sort of ambassadorial representations. They are completely isolated from each other. They know of mutual affairs only through the Paradise Clearinghouse maintained by the seven master spirits. Their rulers work in the councils of divine wisdom for the welfare of their own super universes, regardless of what may be transpiring in other sections of the universal creation. This isolation of the super universes will persist until such time as their coordination is achieved by the more complete factualization of the personality sovereignty of the evolving experiential supreme being.
Okay, so two things there. Come to terms with there's no linkage, you know, sort of around the circuit. The only linkage they have is, you know, in and back out again. Finaliters going all around, there is a cross-pollination phenomenon. Okay, and why is that such a cross-pollinization phenomenon, that ministry of those finaliters? Who'd you take an oath to as a finaliter? Paradise Trinity. Okay. And what is that mother presence, you know, that's overarching the whole grand universe, the universal mother, which is mentioned here again. Oh, and by the way, have you noticed how many times they've used coordination? Coordinate? Yeah. A lot of mother stuff in play. Just notice the last one here very definitively. This isolation of the superuniverses will persist until such time as their coordination, till a mother presence, evolves to the point, until their coordination is achieved by the more complete factualization of the personality sovereignty of the evolving experiential supreme being. Again, who is the personality sovereignty down here? The universal mother. Okay.
Is a finaliter to go from one superuniverse to another, do you go directly? Or do you have to?
No, you go. Yeah, because remember, your home base is, is in the central. I'd have a paradise, really. So you go out to a super universe and come back in and get a new assignment.
Okay. Yeah, you wouldn't go.
You're not going around this way, no?
Right.
Yeah. But.
You can tell there's plenty of compensatory mechanisms that you wouldn't need to have anything like what they just described there. Really wouldn't be a need for it.
And see, that was one of their rulers work in the councils of divine wisdom. Okay, they're perfect beings. So coincidentally, everything is perfectly coordinated with no overt, intercommunication. It's not like they have to send an ambassador over. So, what are you doing next? They just do what must be done, and guess what? It all works together perfectly. But part of the reason that they're reminding you that it really does work together perfectly is because you have a ubiquity always. Mother deity is very important. This distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other. Here they just are talking about how they weren't connected with each other, except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. Okay. So you always have that mother fact at various levels of the hierarchy, keeping it a whole. That's the deity that remains within, so that there is that wholeness within when the father pulled himself out. All right, let's do the deliberative assembly. This is just this little section here. Get you a little flavor of, so that was the executive branch. What about the legislative branch?
You want me to continue?
Yeah, why don't you just go ahead. Yeah.
Deliberative assembly. It is on such worlds as Uversa that the beings representative of the autocracy.
Autocracy. God, don't mess it up. It's one of the greatest quotes in the book.
It is.
It is on such worlds as Uversa that the beings representative of the autocracy of perfection and the democracy of evolution must meet face to face.
Or meet face to face. Must meet. It's not a must. Okay. It is on such worlds as Uversa that the beings representative of the autocracy of perfection and the democracy of evolution meet face to face. Okay? You want to dwell on that. That should challenge lots of simplistic spiritual consciousness that treats the word autocracy as the abomination of desolation. Okay? As a horrendous word. And there's nothing but evil in autocracy, says your simplistic spiritual consciousness. Well, not when it's the autocracy of perfection, okay? And who are those autocrats?
God.
The Ancients of Days, who are God, okay? Yeah. What did Lucifer call those autocrats? He saw them...
Foreign potentates.
Lucifer thought of those autocrats the same way that all kinds of simplistic, spiritually conscious people on this planet think about autocrats. You should catch yourself. Wait a minute, I'm thinking just like Lucifer did. Maybe that's not a good thing.
Thinking democracy is innately divine.
Yeah, or that you can somehow, that democracy doesn't need autocracy. And, you know, and mm-hmm. See, it's all, it's rich with recognition of greater truth. Okay, truth in the universe exists in the dynamic flow between autocracy and democracy. Neither is a complete lifestyle solution. Okay. But, you know, we think in dichotomies here. So we think it has to be either autocracy or democracy, and that they're enemies of each other, or at the very least they're oil and water. No, if there's going to be truth, they need to be brought together. Wait a minute. Huh. There is a pattern here. They talked about an executive branch and then a legislative branch. It's almost like the three branches of government came down from on high. Right. See, what we're attempting to do here, if we hold to the truth of the construct of the United States, you know, with the executive branch and our legislative branch, is to be striving towards this perfect harmony. The truth that can exist in the relationship between the executive and the legislative branches. And the moment anyone starts thinking that the key to light and life lies on one side or the other, you know, a benign dictatorship, you know, or some magical pure democracy. No. If you try to stand, you know, if you try to live at either endpoint, you know, civilization will collapse. There's no truth at either endpoint. The truth exists in the relationship between the two.
Just as with the individual.
Yeah. As above, so below. As without, so within. Everything is one pattern. Okay. So that's, you know, they tried to capture your imagination with a, you know, a very compelling use of words, you know, the autocracy of perfection and the democracy of evolution, to really get you thinking about what we're missing, why this book is in my lap, why there's an emergency. You know, it's a philosophic emergency. And there's a simple example. The fact that we got people who think you can live on one end or the other. All right, go ahead.
The executive branch of the supergovernment originates in the realms of perfection. The legislative branch springs from the flowering of the evolutionary universes.
Maybe we could just comment, you know, look at our legislative branch, how we have, you know, the two houses, you know, so that you have that welling up, the House of Representatives, see, you know, and it wells up to the Senate. See, it's meant to have that, you know, upflowing character. Mm-hmm.
The deliberative assembly of the super universe is confined to the headquarters world. This legislative or advisory council consists of seven houses, to each of which every local universe admitted to the super universe councils elects a native representative. These representatives are chosen by the high councils of such local universes from among the ascending pilgrim graduates of an Orvantan, who are tarrying on Universa, accredited for transport to Havona. The average term of service is about 100 years of super universe standard time.
Okay, that's about 8 1/5 of our years. So, you know, not extremely long time, but good little chunk of time. You know, remember we talked about how we're not part of this yet. We don't have these representatives. But, you know, notice the interesting thing about, you know, where these representatives are coming from. That you've got an ascender, say, from Nebadon, you know, that's made it all the way up. You know, not just, it can't be just within the satellites and subsatellites of Uversa, but it has to have made it all the way to Uversa really and completed the Universa part of the regime, you know, and is technically ready to go to Havana.
Accredited for transport.
Right, but is going to tarry. So it has to be all the way to dotting the last I of the super universe part of the ascension to have the level of perfection to work directly with the super universe government like this. But you get it. Okay. What is he, if he's accredited for transport to Havana, he's achieved what?
Perfection of purpose.
Perfection of purposing. So you can be part of the whole purposing crew. Now, why are there seven houses? Yeah, but of course we're in one super universe. There's seven different schemes going on in each super universe. Right? See, so you have seven different houses of the legislative body. Because of those seven different schemes. So, you know, if we were part of this, as if Nebadon was part of this, we would have representatives representing not just the ascension scheme, but the other six schemes too. They're going on in Nebadon. Yeah, we don't know anything about them.
You're not talking about the schemes of seven super universes, but the six other schemes. Besides ascending.
Right, and remember, and those are the seven primary schemes. Right. One scheme for each super universe. Only the seventh super universe, where it has the ascension scheme, is the primary scheme. The other six are secondary schemes, you know, but those other six, you know, they're the primary in one of the other six. And the ascension scheme is secondary. So, for instance, you know, Grand Fanta coming from the first super universe. The ascension scheme is not the primary scheme there, but he's still the first one to make it. So it's not like you get, you know, an inadequate ministry of ascenders there. Obviously, you get a very adequate ministry to ascenders. It's just not the primary thing going on there. So, you know, who knows? Maybe you'll get to do this before you head off to the central universe. You could actually, it's like, well, what would that mean? Well, that's what the next paragraph is about. It's pretty cool stuff.
Never have I known of a disagreement between the Orbentown executives and the Universa Assembly. Never yet in the history of our super universe has the deliberative body ever passed a recommendation that the executive division of the super government has even hesitated to carry out. There always has prevailed the most perfect harmony and working agreement, all of which testifies to the fact that evolutionary beings can really attain the heights of perfected wisdom, which qualifies them to consort with the personalities of perfect origin and divine nature. The presence of the deliberative assemblies on the superuniverse headquarters reveals the wisdom and foreshadows the ultimate triumph of the whole vast evolutionary concept of the Universal Father and His Eternal Son.
One little thing at the end there. Remember how we're kind of talking about the relationship between the Infinite Spirit and the Paradise Trinity? Yeah, they brought up the other two there at the end. That those two initiated something, and who's handling what they initiated? The other two. So you have this division there. But yeah, remember how when we were talking about prayer, you know, and to begin to recognize that when it appears that a prayer has been answered, that's because you've actually achieved some sort of resonance with the wisdom of God. You haven't made God do something that he didn't want to do because you used some magical word. Okay. You know, you've struck step a little bit with what must be. Okay, you had the same thought. And, see, you're taking that to completion here. Take that all the way up, and you're in this body. And so these group of ascenders say, well, you know, what I think should happen, they put out a little prayer, okay, And guess what? Never yet in the history of our super universe has the deliberative body ever passed a recommendation, said a prayer, that the executive division of the super government has even hesitated to carry out. Just like that, the answer to your prayer. Okay? Is that because you forced God, you forced the Ancients of Days to do something? No.
Yeah.
He struck step. Okay? So, see, this is taking it to that fullness. Once you have perfection of purpose, don't be surprised if your sense of purpose perfectly lines up with the source of all purpose. It's God. Okay? And so, it's just a great little, if you put the pieces together, it's the apex of what you can begin to understand about prayer, and start with that, change your notion of prayer, and then just start thinking about everything like that. What you're trying to do is get yourself into that mode where it is my will that your will be done. It's the legislative will that something be done. Well, guess what? It's also the executive branch's will, too.
But Chris, how does that apply when you're praying for others? Like, on Facebook, there's a lot of prayer requests for whatever, family, friends, hardships,
again, let's not launch into that. That's a huge, the Urantia book gives you an awful lot on prayer. Study what the Urantia book has on prayer. It talks about, how your initial evolutionary thoughts of prayer fit into the big picture. What I'm trying to give you is what the full truth, what it is that you're actually shooting for. You're shooting for this, okay? You're shooting for getting into a state where you're not, trying to get the gods to do something for you. You're trying to strike step with the gods. And beyond that, your prayer life is, by and large, it's an expression of thanksgiving, of recognition of the infinite grace that has been given you, and that, why would I even want to ask for anything? If you really get so you recognize just how much you've already been given, you're going to go, well, what exactly would I ask for now that I know what I've been given? But when you think you've been given nothing, when you think even that God has forgotten that you exist, that's all you do is ask for something. It's like, if there's a God out there, could you notice that I exist? Or did you notice that Bob is sick? And God goes, oh, no, I missed that. Being a little facetious there, but I'm trying to make the point, okay? Just think about it for a second. Do you think God doesn't know that Bob's sick? Okay, now, that doesn't mean it's like, well, I'm not going to pray ever again. No, read what the Urantia book says about prayer. You want to have a strike step with an evolutionary, a maturing relationship with prayer. Start out where you were programmed to, and how you were programmed to pray. But begin to choose to evolve your prayer life forward towards this endpoint of perfect synchronization with God. That's what you're looking for. It is my will. Okay, your will be done. There's stepping stones along that path. One of those is, before you get to the point where you say it is my will that your will be done, you say not my will but your will be done. At least you're surrendering a little bit of a hold on a universe that revolves around you. But everything has to be taken up the levels of meaning. You can't just magically jump from an initial first level of meaning prayer life, which you're programmed to have. There's a prayer life in the level of the flesh that was coded into you by the life carriers. Okay, it starts there, and so just like all the levels, your first there, then, you know, okay, you have to move up one step at a time. You can't jump any skip over any levels. Move prayer up the levels of meaning. Okay? But trying to be moving it up. Try to be moving it up. That's the key. And if you can bring prayer, that sort of animal origin evolutionary prayer up to the sixth level of meaning, what you'll have done is gone from prayer through thanksgiving to true worship. And in the wake of it, actually establishing your first true worship state, a real connection to the cosmos, in the wake of that, you can have true prayer. So you have ever higher meaningful prayer. You're bringing up the levels of meaning. Once you get it all the way up, now you can make it cosmic and you can make it true. More and more meaningful prayer and then true prayer. That's the key. You know, and as you, obviously, as you're moving up, there's always stuff above you. Your prayer is always an upward moving thing. But once you get to the top, it flips. True prayer is a downwelling expression, like we were talking about. It's your purposed self in the upper domain of the hourglass gently reaching down to strike a sublime relationship with the self that's still striving upward.
And I like the one where they say the mind consents, the spirit yearns, and the thought adjuster conducts the worship in the name of the spirit and the mind.
Yeah, and that, see, you know, we've talked about that. That wing that connects to the cosmos, that contemplative worship, that true worship, you know, that's facilitated by the adjuster, that linkage between the heart, the upper domain of the hourglass, and the cosmos. The adjuster facilitates that linkage. Who facilitates the linkage between the purposed self and the not yet purposed self? Your angels. Remember how the adjusters and the angels, they don't have to talk to each other, but they're in perfect sync. Okay. And they need to be, because it's just like the seven super universes. There's this universe over here, and there's this one over here. But coincidentally, they work in perfect harmony. You can actually have a reflective state that's very effective, because the adjuster's helping make this true, and your angels are helping to make this true, and it flows through. The angels are working on this blockage. The adjuster's working on this blockage.
While you're sitting here consenting.
And you're at the center point. You're the valve. You know? Doesn't matter how much the adjuster and the angels do, if you close the valve in the center point here, nothing flows. You have absolute free will. You have control over that. Yeah, that's personality.
So, bottom line, if you want to pray, you should pray. You should pray a lot and sincerely. And what was the part about who will help translate it for us?
Remember, prayer actually sort of moves in the spirit presence, you know, we call spirit gravity, you know, or the spirit presence of the sun, and there's the absolute focal point of that spirit presence, but there's a local focal point, the creator sun. So your prayer is immediately going to flow to the relative, the local gravitational point of spirit gravity. You know, the sun will draw it to himself, and then if need be, it'll go on. Yeah. But they tell you, you know, the creator sun has got a fair amount of ability. He could probably handle it. Okay. he probably doesn't need to pass it up to dad. Okay. He's got a lot of pull. A gravity pun.
So what what is he doing with the prayer?
Yeah, see, that, and that's, I mean, again, well, again, just, you know, go do some study. You know, there's no way we can even, I can even remotely do justice.
About the prayers,
but just kind of, well, think some more about it in this mode.
But if it's already harmonizing when we pray, the sun isn't really doing anything with it.
Well, look at how they describe this. This relationship between the legislative and the executive. They actually interacted. The, how did it say? That the executive division of the super universe even hesitated to carry out. There is a carrying out that occurs. It's not like God is... It's not listening to prayer. It's not like he's ignoring prayer. You know, because I don't need to listen to them. I already know exactly what to do, and I'm just going to do what I'm going to do. It's not like that.
He's waiting for them to consent.
Well, yeah. There's, what are you trying to do? It is my will that your will be done. You have perfection of purpose here. Okay? The Father started, you know, really kind of the infinite one, started with the pool of all potential purposing, total will. And he doled it out. The Creator Son doesn't have all of the purposing in the universe. The Universal Father doesn't have all the purposing in the universe. The Eternal Son doesn't have. No being, creator or creature, has all of the purposing. You have part of it. And if you actually get up to where you're using that potential to purpose in a way that strikes step with God, that's going to happen. See, the universe must be purposed. The universe is mind-made and personality-managed. You're going to manage part of it. But only when you've gotten up to the level of perfection of purpose, basically. And this is in this very holistic sense. But even now, you can have little shades of that. There can be one tiny little nugget where you purpose true. It's as if God's doing it then. Because where did that purposing come from? God. Okay? You are to be part of the total purposing. Okay? And so, the Creator Son recognizes, listens to you and goes, ah, Sydney is with me. I shall do this because we are one in this sense. We when you go to that highest domain of personality, it's as if all things are one. You function as one fact. You aren't God, but you are perfectly synchronized with God. For you to have that purpose is for God to have that purpose.
Okay, so you initiate.
Right. The Father gave you personality. The Father is the initiator. He gave you the potential to initiate. But the universe is not going to respond to your attempt to initiate if your initiation is untrue. It needs to be both your will and it needs to be the way of the cosmos. You have to not only have your will consecrated to the perfect will of God the Father, but you have to have your mind consecrated to the universal harmony. The two have to come together. If they do, even in the littlest measure, it will be like you commanded the gods to do something, like your prayer was answered.
Right.
What really happened is you've participated a little bit in the personality management of the universe. The universe is mind-made and personality-managed. See? That's what's happening. That's what's really happening. The fifth epical revelation has finally revealed this to us. We now can actually understand why it seems that prayer works, but there isn't any magic. The only way humans could ever rationalize prayer working, because it seems like it works sometimes, well, there must be magic. And I must have figured out the magic words.
Robert.
We finally can understand it logically. What is going on with prayer? Yeah. Yep.
I was just reading that some of our prayer, we won't have the capacity to know the answer until the mansion worlds and all the way up to paradise. Even prayers we have now,
yep,
we won't know for...
Right. And so think about that in this mode we were just talking. So there is some valid purposing being expressed, but we're not in an existential state. That purposing has a perfect point in time when it, you know, expresses. So you have to wait for that point in space and time to come around. But you got it right. You had great foresight. Your personality gives you foresight. You had a great foresight of a point in space and time 100 trillion years from now. And guess what? 100 trillion years from now, that's exactly what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know?
Wow. So, would you start now, or would it be wise? I think prayer gives you strength, and it also helps you recognize and adjust to the problem that you're praying for.
Yeah, so now just go back and think about, you know, it's not like there isn't meaning before you get to true prayer. You're going up the levels of meaning. There's always meaning to prayer. It's always meaningful. It just starts out with very level of flesh sort of meaning, and it goes up, okay? That's why I say, I mean, start praying. Just pray, because it always has meaning. Just, you know, don't get delusional about it. Don't think that, you know, as an animal origin being, I'm instantly going to, you know, be able to move the stars in their courses because I want them to move. You know, you're a long ways from that personality management level, okay? But you know, when you get up to here, you can. Yeah? If this deliberative body says, you know what we really need to do? We need to rearrange the local universes in this minor sector.
For me, it's most helpful to pray in terms of wanting whatever is the highest good for this individual, according to God's will, according to your will, not according to my will, because my understanding is so minuscule, mm-hmm, of what the highest good may be. So if I can sort of leave it there.
Okay. See, that's exactly, that's it. That's the step. You start out with not my will, but your will be done, because that's all you can do to start with. But eventually you'll get to the point where it's like, wait a minute. No, I actually have a hold of something solid here. You know, read about Jesus. How did Jesus start out, you know, in that full commanding mode? No. He started out saying, why do you call me good? Only God is good. You know, not my will, his will be done. He started out there too. But he didn't end there. Okay? You won't end there either. You'll keep going up. And there will be a time when you know that your will is God's will. You're not delusional anymore. Okay? You know, and you say it with courage. You know, it is my will. How cool is that? That your will be done. All right. Well, see, now you thought last week when we got off on prayer that was a curious tangent, but lo and behold, yep, here it is. That's exactly what they're really getting at right here, is true prayer. All right, so we'll deal with the judicial branch, which it should be the sort of the least surprising is in play, because after all, one of those functions of the Paradise Trinity is justice administration. So we'll pick up that. We'll finish out the paper next week. And it ends, you know, with the purposes of the seven super universe. That's that seven scheme thing that we keep alluding to here. All right, let's take a moment here.